You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, if it's Thursday, it's The Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with myself, Mark.
And me, Garth.
And Leon is not with us tonight. I'm not sure what's happening there with Leon. I think he's working very, very long hours, very, very late.
I could pretend to be Leon. Hello. My name's Leon.
Well, Garth, I've got some exciting news.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's good. That's a nice change.
So there's a new king.
Yeah?
In Skellige.
What?
I helped her. In fact, it's a queen. I helped her become the queen.
Yeah.
Because I had to beat the ice giant.
What?
And fight in the chasm.
Have you been playing a new board game, perhaps?
No, no. Garth, I have a problem.
Oh, yes.
I have many. But one of them is that now must be, what, 3 or 4 years late to the party. I've been playing The Witcher 3.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, that's a little light. Sort of easy to play board game.
Yeah, yeah, it's a few hours involved in that game.
How many hours, Mark?
Well, let's just say I've cracked over to triple figures.
Okay.
And but I can tell you all about Novigrad and
excellent.
Yennefer and
what time do you go to
Triss
bed?
And Ciri and the Bloody Baron and
what time did you go to bed last night?
Late, Garth.
Yeah, what time?
It had a 2 in it.
Okay. And then what time did you go to bed the night before?
Oh, it may have had a 2 in it as well.
A little bit addicted by the sound.
Yeah, look, if I'm mumbling a bit tonight and sort of lose track, that's why, unfortunately, I have been a little bit hooked on The Witcher. Thank you so much to our great friend Aidan, who convinced me that I had to give that a go.
Aidan's sponsoring the show, is he? Good on him.
How right he was. But tonight, it's episode 238 on the 15th of November. He is still in 2018, not for that much longer. We've got a couple of games to talk about that we managed to squeeze in this week between trips to Skellige, Novigrad and Velen. And then I've also got a bit of a Kickstarter update because I've got to justify the cost of my computer by using it for some other things apart from playing games.
Yeah, but we've also got not one but two what we've been playing this week. So this show is actually a really chock-a-block show. And although we've done nothing but talk about video games, it is all about board games and card games and dice games and all of those things. So we better get to it.
Yes.
Now, Mark, you better press that button, play a quick song, and we will come back with the first of what we have been playing lately. You're with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
That was the Foo Fighters with Enough Space here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You're with the Dice Men Cometh here. We're back again on a Thursday evening talking all about board games, card games, various tabletop games. Tonight and a bit later on, I'm going to be talking about Kickstarter and some new up-and-coming games you can purchase there. But first, Garth.
Yes?
We just recently played a game for the second time that we played. Must be almost a bit over a year?
Yeah, a bit over a year ago, because we played it for the first time in PAX.
The previous PAX.
PAX 2017. And when we say we played it, what we mean to say is we played it wrong.
Yes.
And that's why it doesn't count. So it's taken us a year to get another game to the table because there's just so many other games in this hobby. So this week, we are taking us back to the mid-1800s and the golden age of everyone's favourite activity, whaling.
Arr, she blows!
In a game called New Bedford, published by Dice Hate Me Games and designed by Nathaniel Levin, who has only really done one or two other little things, but I guess Nantucket is another one.
Okay.
Which not many people would have heard about. But Nolan Nasser, who's the artist, has done art for quite a few games, including Spirit Island. So, yeah, it's got a bit of a artistic pedigree. But in terms of the design, I remember when this came out on Kickstarter and I hovered over this back button for so long.
Yes.
And I thought, whaling's an interesting theme. I should back this. I wonder how it's going to be received.
Yes. Because we love whales, not to eat.
Exactly.
But as animals, very intelligent.
Correct.
And obviously, you know, there are still a couple of countries that
for scientific purposes hunt only, whales. I'm sure.
Nom, nom, nom.
So, political attitudes towards whaling aside,
yes,
whaling was a big deal, and particularly in the area in which this game was set in, which is, not surprisingly, the town of New Bedford, based in Massachusetts in the USA.
Well, people may not know that here in Hobart, there was a thriving whaling industry.
Absolutely.
In the late 19th century, you know, whales.
Yep.
Seen up and down the Derwent River here in Hobart, and...
Well, you've still got harpoon scars, haven't you?
Oh, dear. But the great thing is we are seeing the return of whales here to the Derwent Estuary.
Yes, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
The more, the better. So this game, New Bedford, is... Look, it's a 1-4-player game where you are all basically running competing whaling businesses, I guess. It doesn't explicitly say that, but... You are there to gather resources, grow the town,
yep.
Ultimately sending your ships out to the ocean to hunt whales, to then bring them back and convert those whales into victory points. And I'm pretty sure that's historically accurate.
Well, there's that great little self-reinforcing loop of you as whalers investing in the town, which then enables you to... Better equip your ships, correct. Better build your ships, better sell your whales when you come back, better mm-hmm. recruit people to help you to, you know, to be a better whaler.
Absolutely. So, look, it's a little bit of a worker placement game. I guess in some respects it's not quite area control, but it's kind of screwing over everybody. And I guess we better tell you how to play first of all. So the game will start with a little centralized town, weird shape. It's not a rectangle. It's not a normal sort of board. It's got all rectangular notches on it because you're then going to be growing the town. And in the notches, that's where you'll be putting these little town building squares. And each player, and ideally you want to play it with four, I reckon.
Yeah, I think four is the perfect number for
everyone us. Sort of has a quarter of the town, and they're going to be trying to grow their particular quarter of the town. And the way you're going to do that is every player is going to have two workers. And you better get used to those two workers because that's all you're going to get for the whole game. That's one thing. You're going to start. First player is going to place their worker on a building. And the building might allow them to get more resources like bricks or wood or food. Or they might want to convert some of those resources into actually building a building. Mm-hmm. So you go to a particular area that allows you to build a building by cashing in some bricks or wood. Not food, and that will then allow you to buy a really large number of potential buildings if you've got the right resources to do so. Once you get those resources, you build your building in your little quarter of the town, which will then allow you to place a future worker on that building to get those particular benefits. And the benefits sort of branch off into a whole bunch of different benefits, like extra resources, like discounts for when you might launch a ship to go whaling, a whole bunch of different benefits, including some of the, you know, just end-game scoring.
Yeah, yeah. You can get discounts on future building.
Yep.
You can send your ship out whaling at a cheaper cost.
Yep. You can bring whales back for cheaper, which is great.
There's a whole range.
But in essence, it's one of those resource collection games where you're building the tableau in front of you and it is a shared tableau because even though you own those buildings, any other player can use your buildings as long as they pay you a dollar every time they do so. Now, one of the interesting things about these buildings is that the first player to go on there will almost certainly get an extra benefit.
Yes.
So if you're the first person to go to the wood place, you'll get an extra wood. If you're the first person to go to the trading house, you'll get one extra resource when you do your transaction. If you go to another building, though, it might only have a spot for the very first person. So only one person can ever go there. And a really classic example of that is that there's a building you can build, which if you place your worker there, once everyone's completed their actions, you can bring back your two workers and have two more turns.
Yes. I built that building, Garth.
And I know.
You guys basically stole it from me for the cost of a dollar a round.
I think we financed it for
the game.
I can't believe you say stole, because the very first building I built was the post office. Now, the post office yes. in itself doesn't have any inherent value, except at the end of every round, you get $2,
yeah.
which is brilliant Woo-hoo. Because money is tight.
It is.
Problem is, post offices can move. So if someone chooses to place their worker on my post office, you don't have to pay me a dollar because...
It's no longer your post office.
That's in the rules, but it moves to someone else's thing. So I think yeah. I played that. And in a game that lasts for 12 rounds, I might have got the benefit once. And I only really did that to screw over Trent because he's my brother-in-law. So this game goes round and round and round for the course of 12 rounds. You're going to place your workers out there. Now, there's two boards. The town board that we've just talked about. The second board is the actual whaling board, which is a very little pretty board where at one end you've got the port. You've got a then increasingly, what is it? You've got seven potential hexes that you can go out, signifying how far out into the ocean yeah, that you're yeah. going to be going.
How far away are you going to go and how much time are you going to spend out there actually Correct. Looking for whales?
And launching a boat is a two-step process. You can basically pay resources to get your boat ready. Then you've got to pay food in order to feed the people on your boat. And the more food you spend, the further away your ship's yeah. going to be able to go. Now, the reason you want to do that is after everyone has played their two workers and it's the end of that phase of the round, you're then going to go to the whaling phase. And the whaling phase is where you go and take a whole bunch of potentially whale tokens out of your whale bag. The number of tokens you'll bring out will be directly correlated to how many ships are out there actually hunting whales. Mm. And the furthest out ships are going to get first dibs at whales. That is important.
Yes.
Because, as we all know, whales are valuable, but different whales have different values. And in this particular case, there are three different types of whales. There is the sperm whale, the bowhead, and the right whale. Mm. One is worth four victory points, two victory points, and one victory point, yes. respectively. That's important. So first player is going to get the dibs of possibly the best one, because I believe it's the sperm whale from memory that's the most expensive whale and the one will give you the most yes. victory points. But they are also the rarest whale, so yeah. there's the fewest of those in the bag. And in our particular game, I think there was one that we were able to get out of the bag. Yours truly was able to claim it, not because I was the furthest out, but because the person who was the furthest out didn't want to claim it.
Which is very strange.
Well, but that's another power yes. that you have with being furthest out. You get to choose from these whales. You choose your whale, then the person who is the next furthest out gets to choose and so on and so on. And not to mention, though, that there are quite a large number of empty sea tokens in this whale bag. And as the game progresses, in perfect historical context, whales become less frequent and dead and empty ocean becomes more frequent. Yes. So whaling becomes not so profitable after all. You're going to do this for 12 rounds. Build your city up. Send your boats out to go whaling. Every time you do whaling, the ships move in one and they become closer and closer and closer to shore until inevitably they return on the return spot, and that's when you've got to pay for them.
This is, to me, this is the puzzle in this game is, hey, it's great to go out and spend lots of time out at sea whaling because, you know, that's what you want to do in the game.
Yes.
But if you fill up your ship with whales, you've also somehow got to fill up your coffers with cash, because by the time you come back in, you've got to sell to, I guess it's, you know, you're paying to process the whales.
You're paying to process, you're paying your crew as a reward. And, yeah. and look, a whale that is worth one victory point is worth $2. So you've got whales that are worth $2 or $4 or $8 yes. for the big sperm whales. And that is a lot of money, particularly early on in this game. So you'll do that. Hopefully, when your ships come back, you can pay for all of this. But if you can't, it then becomes an auction. And basically, your player to your left gets first dibs. If they can pay for a whale of yours, they just get it for the cost. They haven't had to send their ships out and haven't had to spend the resources to be able to get their ships out and all of the costs associated. They just go, oh, hey, Garth, couldn't afford that right whale. I'll just pay $2. Thanks. Bye. And they get the whale Plus, they get the victory point, which hurts if someone takes your whale.
Yes.
Now, this game is pretty straightforward in that regard. For 12 rounds, you're building the city. For 12 rounds, you're going to go whaling. At the end of it, it is very simply who has the most points. And it's typically who has the most points through whales, plus some of the buildings which offer no benefit during the course of the game,
yep,
except end game points. And that is how you play.
Yeah, and look, we had quite a bit of fun. Now, not surprisingly for us, this game plays, according to the box, in 30 to 60 minutes.
Yeah, pretty reasonable.
We took...
Two and a bit hours
to play this. Now, look, you know, the reason that happens with us is because we tend to chat. We tend to have a bit of banter. We tend to get stuck into each other, you know, between rounds and everything like that. So, you know, it's not downtime, but it did take a while, this game. And 12 rounds does take a while.
Sure does.
I don't know how you could get it down under 60 minutes with four players, yeah, although you are only placing two meeples and then you're bringing your ships one step closer. But that little puzzle of, well, you need bricks and wood to build buildings, but then you also need wood to get your ships ready, but then you need food to send out your ships, but then you need money sometimes
so that you can pay for the building,
but to pay for your whales when you come back in. So you've got a bit of time to get your money together because hopefully your ship's going to go out a while.
Mm. Out a while.
Out a while.
Ah, okay.
But, yeah, it's that puzzle of not huge amount of moving bits, but, you know, three or four moving bits that you're trying to massage together, because the worst thing possible is to not be able to forward your whales when you come in. You know, you get a really good chit pull out of the bag and some great whales come out and you get them and you're filling up your boat. And then it's like, oh, I've got six whales and it's going to cost me, you know, $15 or $20.
Yep.
And a lot of the times, you know, you can only get two or three, maybe four.
Maybe $5 a round. And this is the thing. The great thing about this game is that you've got future planning. You know how far your ship is out. You know how many rounds you've got.
Mm.
And you can control that. There is nothing in the game that impacts my ship coming back. I know that it's going to take four rounds for it to be coming back, so I can plan for that. I know how much it's going to cost. And because I might not be the first one or two whalers who is furthest out, I also know I'm probably not going to get a high-value whale. So yeah. I can sort of plan, okay, well, I might get another $2 so I can get another right whale or another couple of bucks and I can get a bowhead. And there's no way I'm going to get a sperm whale because that will be taken.
Yeah.
So you can plan that ahead. And, of course, there are buildings that if they are built, because in our game, nowhere near all the buildings were built. In fact, I built two.
So say maybe less than half actually got built.
I built two. One was the post office that I never saw. And then one, I can't even remember what it was, but it gave me a slightly better return on investment. So instead of getting one wood, one brick and one food, I got two wood, one brick and one food, something slightly more beneficial.
Well, I think you built four buildings, didn't you? I built four and I had built the most. But, you've got the ability to mitigate. So the only luck in this game really is the drawing of whales.
Yes.
And obviously you've got the ability to mitigate some of that by, if you can get your ship out as far as possible at the right time, then you'll get first or second or third dib at those whales. The bad thing is if you're getting, you know, because there's, if you're playing with four and you've got two ship seats, there's potentially eight ships out there. You always draw one more tile. So you might be drawing nine tiles. But as you said, I think we had up to three or four of those could be empty water.
Yep.
Now, I did have a building that could turn empty water into money, which is really nice, and it also took those empty water tiles out of the game.
Yes.
But even so, there was still plenty of them coming out. So you can mitigate that luck a little bit.
Yeah.
But it is a strategic and tight little worker placement game. I believe there's a five-player expansion.
Yeah, there is.
I wonder if that replaces the central board and whether it changes the shape. But it was very tight because you only start with those five town spaces And pretty much they're the only ones where more than one person can go. So yeah. you're sort of quite restricted in your actions, which I think that's why that post office spun around so much is because, well, I might as well grab a couple more bucks.
Yeah, well, look, there's a couple of things about this game. And look, if we played it in 60 minutes, I'd probably have a different opinion of having played it in 2 hours. So there is no development of me as a player because I've only ever got two workers. There's nothing to say that once you've brought back $10 worth of whales, you can increase your crew size and get a third worker, and there's nothing like that. So you will always only ever have your two meeples, and you've got to make the best use of those.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. It's just something that I guess we're not so used to anymore. A lot of the time, and you would know better than most, it's all about getting more actions.
Yes.
And it's about getting, okay, well, once I hit a certain milestone, I might be able to get another worker or whatever, but there's none of that. So you start going, what am I going to do with two workers? And then pretty quickly you go, well, I need to do that and then that and then that and then that. And if it all comes together, my plan is successful.
Yeah, and then you find that, okay, I've just planned out the next three turns.
Yes.
And then obviously if someone takes your building, then that's a problem because there's not a lot of ways to do the same thing with other buildings.
That's right. So, look, my main issue with this game is that for the whole last third of it, I reckon, I virtually had no interest in what was going on apart from I needed money. Now, the reason I needed money is that I'd been able to get both my ships quite a far way out, and both of them, because they were still either, you know, ranging from being the furthest out to being the third or the fourth out, almost every single whaling turn, I was getting a whale. And I needed to figure out how to pay for those whales. Now, because of that, I couldn't spend any of my workers on developing my portion of the town. I was solely focused on visiting the bank, which I think gives you $5 every turn.
Yes.
And then if the chance presented itself, I would visit your tile, which converted empty water into money. Because, yes, it would cost me a dollar, but I think I would then get $5 back.
Or six, depending on how many.
So
you were
I was getting
in,
$10 back, and I needed that because I'm pretty sure when my ships came in, because when the end of the 12 rounds are over, any ships that are still out come back in anyway. You've got to pay for those. I had to pay $22 or $28. Yes. I had to pay a lot. And when the maximum, if the stars aligned, I was able to get was 10. So I had no interest in the last third of the game apart from money, 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 money. And I won.
Yes.
So I was able to do that. But that's a negative thing is that I just didn't care what you guys were doing because all I was worried about is my two ships were out there. They were filling up with whales over which I had virtually no control over. The only reason I took the sperm whale, which was the only one in the game, is because I think I must have been second furthest out to Trent. And Trent took a bow whale, but that's because he had a building that gave him a victory point for every two bow whales that he'd caught. And I didn't enjoy that last third, apart from the fact that I won, because I wasn't invested in anything apart from maximizing my financial return.
Yeah, and I guess I found that, oh, I don't know, with the, you know, getting your ships out there, you get towards the end, this that you sort of, you're trying to get your ship back and then get it back out again as quickly as possible because, you know, when you, it's like fishing, when your line's not in the water, you can't, there's no possibility of getting a bite. And you can say, you've got to get your ship back out there to catch more whales. But then there's that sort of, well, as you get to the third or the second last round, you don't want to go too far out because it costs you a lot of food and you're not going to get the turns on the way back. But then also you need to get far enough out where you actually might get the more, the whales that are worth more victory points. It is an interesting dilemma. Yeah, look, I had fun. It did feel a bit long. Yeah. And, yeah, as you said, maybe if it had taken the 60 minutes, it mightn't have. It felt right with four, and I don't know how you would add five. I might not be tight enough with less than four.
Yeah.
But, hey, look, it was fun. It was good to play it correctly for once. look, you know, there's some nice little wooden bits, the big round, whether they're breads or cheeses, I don't know, and the bricks and the little the whale token that moves
and
in
a
and out.
And a completely unnecessary first player marker, which is the ship steering wheel bit. So, look, I mean, this was fine. It was fine.
Yeah.
It went too long. If we sat down and played it again, I'm sure we can cut the playtime down a bit. But still, I just sort of felt that if me as a player, all I'm worried about is money and not any part of the game, there's some design flaw there. So, look, I would much rather play something else that takes an hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this day and age, there are plenty of worker placement games. It is tight. It is quite that balance, I guess, between strategic and tactical, because you sort of have to plan out your couple of moves. But because the buildings are limited, sometimes you can't do what you want on that turn. So there is, you know, there are some interesting decisions there. Look, I'd certainly give it another crack. But, yeah, it was okay.
There you go. That is a resounding... So anyway, I think it's pretty fair to say that the Dice Men found that game jaded.
That was Green Day, feeling a bit jaded here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. Again, we're talking about board games tonight. And if you've never tuned in before, if you're still listening, hello, because you probably went, what is that? And switch to another station maybe if you're listening live here in Hobart. But for those people on the podcast, you've got nowhere better to go. You're driving along in the car, walking to work. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us here today. Now, we like to talk about Aussie stuff because we're Aussies. We love to talk about the latest Aussie games, and we played one of the latest Aussie games, which is actually live right now on Kickstarter, Garth.
Sure is. Now, welcome to the diner called Scofton, which is the proud all-you-can-eat buffet that has been running since 1981 in their lovely establishment. You can get your fill of all your favourites, such as prawns, ribs, chicken steak, pork chips, or even that lobster, all perfectly accompanied by some of that delicious, delicious bread. They cater for all tastes, have a wide range of salads, soups, anything to suit that healthy lifestyle of yours. And don't forget, save room for dessert, Mark. Mm. They have cakes, they have pies, fruit Yum. Salad. You can even go to their wonderful and unlimited, two of my favourite words, ice cream machine.
Unlimited ice cream.
So at the restaurant, don't be afraid to get creative. Put your ice cream in your coffee, make an affogato. They don't care. Now, Scofton, which is what we're talking about, which is on Kickstarter right now, is designed by Marcus Finlay and Gavin Vance, who form Vamoose Co., which is the company that is the publisher in this particular case. Now, Scofton is all about trying to grab food and sticking it in my belly.
Fill my boots.
Because the game's going to play until a player has filled their belly. Each player is going to have a player board, which is divided in half. Half is a table and a chair, sort of top-down view. The other half is like an X-ray view of my belly.
Get in my belly.
Yeah, and this is a worker placement game where you are sitting down in this very gauche 80s, 1980s looking buffet with art that I guess ranges in style from early Simpsons to Bob's Burgers style of look, I guess. That's how you describe it.
Yeah, for the first thing I thought when I saw it was...
oh, Beavis and Butthead. Wow.
Like the art was sort of like Beavis and Butthead-like. Yeah, and Bob's Burgers and that sort of adult comedy TV cartoony type look.
Yep.
But obviously very, it's the chic 80s. There's a, you know, there's a few little 80s jokes in the art there.
Yeah. So look, the main board is going to be a top-down view of the buffet, where you've got the buffet place, you've got the ice cream station, you've got the salad stations, you've got the dessert stations, you've got a claw machine where you can try your luck. Mm. You've got a lost and found section where you can hopefully do something that's going to be a little bit more devious. And look, all of those places are where you're going to put your workers. Again, similar to New Bedford, you're going to have three workers, and you will have three workers for the whole duration of this game. Plus, you'll have a sneeze token, which... Well, we'll talk about sneeze token in a little while. So you will, in turn order, get to be able to place your worker in one of the available spaces of the buffet. And what you're going to be trying to do is complete menu items. So as I said in my intro, there is pork and lobster and prawns and beef and chicken and salads and desserts and blah, 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 blah. On the left-hand side, or wherever you want to put it, there are going to be four menu boards, and each of them will have a certain combination of the various main meals and desserts and salads. You want to get those onto your table. You want to get some beef and some chicken and some salad and something else, and then you want to eat it. And once you eat it, your stomach has three compartments which allow you to put four tokens in each one. Once you've got four tokens in one part of your stomach, as long as those four match one of the menu items, you get to eat them all. You get the victory points for the number of points on the actual tiles themselves. Plus, you get a bonus. If you were the first one to complete it, you get more points. If you're the last player to complete it, you get fewer points. That part of the belly is now full. You'll do that three times, and then as soon as someone has a full belly, the game is going to be over. You've got two normal parts of your belly, Mark.
Yes.
And then, like all of us, you've got your dessert belly.
Your dessert stomach, because you always save room for dessert.
Always got room for dessert, and that's cool. That's a really nice little joke, because, as you say, we all have our dessert belly. But the game's going to go round and round and round until that particular thing happens. Now, the actions that you're going to be able to do as using your meeples is go and get food from the buffet. You can go and get food from the dessert bar, the salad bar. You can go and get yourself a cup of coffee. You can go to the ice cream bar. And then you can go to something like the claw machine. And the claw machine is essentially a try your luck. You might get some victory points or value for money points, as they say, or you might get some free bread.
Bomb, bomb, too bad.
Or chances are you're going to get nothing. Now, it must be said that these cards are some of the smallest cards you will ever find in a game. They're about the size of the top joint of your thumb. They're itty bitty. And every time we shuffle them, when you have to shuffle them every time you go to a claw machine, chances are they go...
Now, we should say, obviously, we had a prototype version.
Exactly. We're very lucky to get that.
Although, look, I got to say, hats off to the guys at Vamoose. This is one of the nicest-looking prototypes we've really had. And I know they had limited numbers to send out. So they certainly have gone to a lot of trouble.
Absolutely.
With the art, with the 3D printing of the meeples and the cards. Look, a very nice-looking prototype. And I think you can see on the Kickstarter page, you can see the prototype is pretty close to what the final production values will be.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Mark. So you can go to that the claw machine, or then you can go to Lost and Found. Now, Lost and Found is interesting because in a two-player game, which is what we played, there are going to be three face-up cards available. In a 3-4-player game, there's going to be four face-up cards available. And these cards are going to give you a little bit of a rules break. So there might be the long tongs that allow you to steal something from someone else. Or you might have a pair of shoes that allow you to go over and take something that you shouldn't otherwise be able to get. Or you might be able to get whatever the name of the card is that allows you to do three goes of the claw machine and give that a crack.
So there was sort of like a whole bunch of rule breaker cards that are out there, because each of the spots in the restaurant, and particularly in the buffet area, only one person can go. So if I've got my eye on a bit of lobster, which of course I always do, and you've gone there, Garth, and taken that lobster, and your worker's sitting there basically ready to take it, then, you know, one of those cards might enable me to take the lobster from you, because there'll be another card underneath.
That's right.
Or another token underneath. So there's that competition for those places there, and the cards are those different funny little rule breakers. Now, I don't know why they picked Lost and Found. I guess restaurants have a Lost and Found. But there's certainly the cards work as like little rule breakers cards to sort of mix it up a bit.
Yeah, they certainly do. And really, the way you're going to play this is you're going to start by placing all your workers. Then you have a little round called the management round, which is where you reveal a management card, and that's where there's going to be some effect depending on the worker that you reveal. Yeah. Like it might say everyone gets a bit of bread because the bread waiter's turned up. Or you've got a cleaner who comes around and cleans up all the sneezes, and that's important because – sorry, spills. They'll clean up spills because spills will happen from time to time like they do in any restaurant, and they are, again, in our prototype copy – a beautiful 3D printed spill type shape, and that covers up a spot that workers can go to. So it blocks it out, and they don't disappear until someone cleans up. So it can be a really important thing. So once you've placed your workers, then you've played your management worker, then you get to do the actions. And you get to do them in any order in which you want to. Game will go around, as I say, until one player has filled their belly. Now, the last little bit is this little sneeze token. You can play the sneeze token, which is essentially a, ha, 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 I don't want you to take that lobster mark because it's going to be sneezed on. You've got another lovely little sneeze 3D meeple. You put it on the thing that you want to block. You put your worker on it so it takes you an action, but it stops the opponent from taking that. And that's a little bit of a screw you, which a lot of games should have, except in a two-player game we never used it.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I guess one way you can screw the other person is to stop them from doing the thing, but I guess what we found was the more effective way was to take that thing for yourself.
Absolutely.
In most cases, because there's a reason you want it, because it's good. Now, I will say part of this game, those menu cards, that reminded me of a game I haven't played for ages. I used to absolutely love it, though, Wasabi.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a tile-laying game, but you're making sushi and you're collecting, like, getting two, three, four sushi, different sushi ingredient tiles in a row because you've got these little recipe cards in your hand that you've drawn from a stack and you get points when you make them. And so I guess similar to that, you're assembling four different things to get it might be a bit of steak, a bit of lobster, some chips, and maybe some bread, and it's a surf and turf.
Yeah.
Or the beige plate, which had chicken and chips and bread, or the dessert plate where you've got the four different types of desserts, or various different combinations. And certainly, look, let's get it out. Let's get it out now, Garth.
I won again.
You won. I did. Yes. Yeah. And the reason you won was pretty much, I think, everything you got contributed to one of those recipes. Whereas
absolutely.
I did fill my stomach first, but the last bit of my stomach that I filled didn't get me a recipe.
Any
just because I couldn't quite get the combinations together, although I did get some other bonus points. So I like that part. And there is quite a bit of variety of the recipe cards. So you'll only see, I think there's four of them in a game, and there's quite a few of them in there.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of them. So, look, that's pretty much the game. It's on Kickstarter now, as you say. And, look, it's great to see more Australian games go out there. And it's great to see not just light party games, because Australia produces quite a few lighter games.
Yeah.
It's good to see more worker placement games. And this is not heavy. This is aimed at 10+. And it is a very, very entry-level worker placement game. So you can play it with kids, but it's nice to see that there is a worker placement game out there again getting into the Australian market, and that's fantastic. Like, yeah, we had some fun with it.
I was going to say, to me, I can definitely see this being a family game, as in parents and kids against each other because you really want to screw Dad over and steal that ice cream or steal that lobster. It's the right weight for that, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, because it's easy enough to learn. It's fun. The kids will get into the jokes. Look, if you're a big, heavy Euro worker placement person, this is probably not going to be for you.
No.
But it's certainly, we had quite a bit of fun. It's got those in jokes of the 80s. I mean, you know, it's the Sizzler or the Pizza Hut. Those are sort of all you can eat restaurants that I can certainly remember from the 80s. So there's a bit of fun to be had there. Don't go into this thinking it's going to be a big, heavy game, because it's certainly not. But it looks great, plays relatively quickly.
I know. We actually played it in its time limit. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a learning game. So we were able to read rules, set up, get it all sorted out and play it. And, yeah, look, we both had some fun with this, which is great from another Australian designer.
Yeah, and look, I'll give the Kickstarter stats shortly when I come back with my Kickstarter update.
And that was Essen Unplugged by LFG. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 and Stop the Press. Because that isn't really the song, is it? This is Garth here, and I'm just interrupting the episode briefly to give a little shout out to LFG's Essen Unplugged, which is a 3-day boutique gaming event happening this weekend, actually, the 23rd to the 25th of November in Canberra at the Eastlake Football Club. Now, for those of us who weren't lucky enough to make it to Essen this year, Essen Unplugged in Canberra is the next best thing, and the reason for that is they have got approximately a truckload of the newest and hottest games straight from Essen,
courtesy of some board gaming mules, and they're now available for us to play over this weekend. You've got games such as Azul, The Stained Glass of Sintra. You've got Blackout on Hong Kong, which got so much buzz about it. You've got games such as Here Comes the Dog, Ugugong, Ninja Squad, Rakeholt Skylands, that game that is the spiritual successor to Zolkin, Teotihuacan, that I really can't pronounce, and so, so, so many more. Now, the interesting thing is, I'll actually be there. So I'm jumping on a jet plane on Friday morning to get to Essen Unplugged, which, as I mentioned, is the 23rd to the 25th of November in Canberra at the Eastlake Football Club. So if you want to be a part of a future Dice Man episode, why don't you pop over to Essen Unplugged, come and say hi and we'll have a chat, take some photos, and you might be lucky enough to be on a future episode. So anyway, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to LFG's Essen Unplugged, happening in Canberra at the Eastlake Football Club from the 23rd to the 25th of November. I'm going to be there. I'd love to play a game if you're around. Anyway, better leave you to it. On with the episode.
Shout out to Vamoose Games there. They're up on Kickstarter. They're closing in on 9,000. They've got 25 days to go. Still a bit of a way to go for them. They're looking for 30,000, but it's only been a couple of days. Including shipping, it's $59 for Scofflaw, which is it's a little bit expensive. There's shipping has taken a bit of a hit there. I think it's like $13 for shipping. And look, one of the things I found putting together my Kickstarter update last night is shipping hits us in Australia, doesn't
it?
Sure
does. I mean, oh, my goodness.
Games just seem to be going up and up and up. Now, one that is, bit steep as well, another Aussie Kickstarter, is called Lights, Camera, Pitch. It's by Jack Heath from Canberra, and it's his first game. So the pitch of this game is you're a film or TV producer with 60 seconds to pitch a project based on actors, sets, and title cards that you get in your hand. So players take on the role of that producer who's competing for funding. So it's one of those games where everyone judges and you pitch your movie with your set of cards. So, hey, look, it's quite a light game. And then the studio execs get to ask tricky follow-up questions, make annoying suggestions, and finally decide which film they're going to greenlight. Okay. Now, again, this is just a card game. Think of, you know, your apples to apples, your Cards Against Humanity-style card game. It's $49.
Wow.
Although that does include shipping. But this one has already funded. And look, for people who are, you know, having a crack at something like this, they were only going for $1,600 and they've already got over 5,000. So if you're into this sort of, you know, as I said, the apples to apples, the Cards Against Humanity, but if you're a bit of a film buff, check this one out. As I said, it's still got 9 days to go when we're going live to here on the Thursday night. Now, there's a couple of, I was going to say honorable Aussies, but they are real Aussies,
They're not priced in Australian dollars.
No, well, they're on the global gaming scene. And the first one of those is, we've mentioned him a few times, our good friend from Starling Games, Dan May. Now, Starling Games have been knocking them out of the park recently. They've got Archmage Ascendant. Now, Archmage was out previously. It's a Euro-thematic hybrid that features exploration, resource gathering and management, area control, and a spell combat system.
There you go.
Now, as a fledgling mage, you'll explore a devastated land, deploying loyal followers from your company of mages to gather lost relics. These magic relics can be traded to 6 mythic races, like elves or demons, to gain a fundamental knowledge of their magic. Now, what's on Kickstarter now is Archmage Ascendant, which is the first expansion to Archmage. Now, it has to be said, this is a gorgeous-looking game. No surprise, because as we know, Dan May, he's got a bit of a talent in the art department. So he's been involved in the game development, the art direction, and the graphic design of this game. It's a gorgeous-looking game, and as I said, we've come to expect that from Starling Games. You've just got to look at something like Everdell.
Yes.
That they came out, which is absolutely gorgeous. Now, it's about $150.
Wow.
But that gets you the base game, which is huge, plus the expansion, which is also huge, plus shipping to Australia. Now, this one funded in about 3 hours, still got 14 days to go, so there's plenty of time to get on that one. Another one of our Aussies who's kicking so many goals on the world board gaming stage, of course, is Ian O'Toole.
Who?
Ian O'Toole.
Oh, Ian O'Toole.
You know him?
Yeah.
He draws a bit.
Yep.
So he's done the art and the graphic design for Pipeline, which is an economic spatial awareness strategy game from designer Ryan Courtney and from Capstone Games. Now, this one has smashed it out of the park. It's already 500% funded, yep. With 18 days to go. As I said, you've got resource management where you're an oil company and you want to get your oil to market and you've got to manage your resources. But then it also has the puzzly element of joining your pipes up, a la what's that computer game where you – I can't think what it's called – it's got plumbers in it, but you know, and it's not Mario, where you're basically joining twisting pipes together to make a contiguous pipeline. Sure. So it's got that as well. And of course, because Ian O'Toole has designed this, the board is absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, the board helps to teach you and help you understand how the game works, just like it does with Lisboa and Vinos and the Gallerist.
Yep.
And the third big world stage Aussie player is Matthew Dunstan, who I interviewed not so long ago. He's got together a game with Funforge to bring Monumental. Now, again, this was funded in less than 2 hours. It's heading up towards $600,000 Australian, and they were after less than 80. So it's almost 3,500 backers. Now, again, this one's only got 7 days to go. So if you're listening to the podcast, don't muck around. This is a combination, which sounds fascinating to me, of deck building and a 4X game.
Yeah.
And look, we talked about games, you know, you had your value for money points in Scofton, and we talked about that shipping is expensive and some of these games aren't great value for money. This has so many minis, so many cards, so much content, and I think you're still only looking at, it's about €90 for the game, which has a huge amount of stretch goals that have been released, €20 or €30 for shipping. So you're looking at, what's that, 110, €120. This game has so much stuff.
I'm very tempted to back this one. To be honest, I haven't watched the gameplay. So that's what I need to do. Yeah. I need to look and actually watch some reviewers. I've clicked that little remind me thing. So in the next, when it's got 48 hours to go, I'll be all over that. I want to get this just because I'm curious about it, and I actually think the price is really good.
Well, you compare that with my next game, Assassin's Creed, Brotherhood of Venice. It's the story-driven cooperative miniatures board game set in the Assassin's Creed universe. Now, it's produced by Triton Noir, which is a new company. They're all ex-Ubisoft employees in Montreal, which is where Ubisoft is based. So they're loyal to the Assassin's Creed universe, and apparently they've actually been taking this game all throughout the development down to the Ubisoft office.
Oh, cool.
And playing it with the guys at Ubisoft. So as I said, if you're into the Assassin's Creed universe, it's really loyal to that. But this one you're looking at $210 to $230 is the estimate, including shipping. Now, again, a truckload of minis, looks absolutely gorgeous, huge amount of stretch goals. As we said, this one is cooperative where you're playing the Assassin's Creed team. It's over 400% funded and it's got 21 days to go. But, you know, when you look at Monumental and you look at Assassin's Creed, yes, they don't have the license. It is almost about twice the price.
And Monumental has an actual board game designer at the helm.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you know, you said you haven't checked out the gameplay for Monumental because you don't get a real good idea of it from the video. Look, it's always a bit hit and miss with these licensed properties mini games, isn't it?
Sure is, but it does look spectacular. So if you do have a friend who likes painting them,
yeah,
then it could be worthwhile just so that you can have these beautiful hand-painted miniatures.
Yeah. Look, a couple more quick ones. One that I'm fascinated with, Welcome to Dino World, a dinosaur-themed roll-and-write game by Alley Cat Games. You can draw, roar, and score.
Oh,
so you take control of competing dinosaur-themed parks. Hey, it's all about the dinosaur parks these days. In a roll and write game. Now, again, This one's only got 7 days to go, so don't muck around if you're listening to the podcast. It's already 400% funded. It's $50 for a roll and write, but it does look absolutely gorgeous. And you get to draw a little dino park on your playmat.
Now, because it's Welcome to Dino World, is this by the same people as Welcome to that other solo? Sorry, not solo, the other roll and write?
I don't think so. I think that is just a pure coincidence.
I'd have to say it's not, because they are also running a Kickstarter for the second edition of Welcome to at the same time, I think.
Is that Alley Cat Games as well?
I'll check it right now.
Okay, you do that. Fluff for a little bit. Look, couple more. We've only got a couple of minutes. Van Ryder Games, they brought out that set of 5 graphic novel adventure game books. I know Leon has them. I don't know if he's played them yet, but he was pretty excited about those. They've come out with The Crusoe Crew, which is a cooperative graphic novel adventure game for 1 to 4 players. So in this, you've got a set of 4 books where you're all playing the one adventure, but depending on how many players you play it with, each player has their own book. So it might be, I'm going to go and capture the cat in a tin can and I'll go to page whatever. You go and chase that bad guy in the cave and you go to page whatever. So you're doing it simultaneously. Gorgeous looking graphic novel adventure books. I've heard a lot of good things about that first set, but I haven't seen them in action.
Yeah, and I like in this one how each player also has unique abilities. So you've got the fighty one, you've got the dexterous one, yeah. You've got this one. So
it has a role-playing feel to it, that's for sure.
Very curious about this.
It's a very novel approach.
Hey!
This one, again, it's about $75 Australian, including shipping, which is not cheap, but it does look gorgeous. It's got 18 days to go, and it's already over 250% funded. And the last one is a deluxified edition by Tasty Minstrel, they do this really well, of Stefan Feld's Luna. That was a very popular game of his published in 2010 when he just started to really hit his straps with games. It's got metal victory point tokens and so many upgraded components. Again, it's about $100 shipped to Australia, but it does look gorgeous, and I did hear a lot of good things about the original Luna. I haven't actually played it myself, but if you're a Feld fan, I believe you'll really like it. That one is also funded and also has 15 days to go. Garth, that's all I've got time for.
Well, that's pretty much all we've got time for as well. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode 238. It has been and is still November the 15th. Now, quick shout out. If you have got nothing on between the 23rd and the 25th of November, go to Canberra and join me at Essen Unplugged and play all the hottest games from Essen.
And there might even be a surprise ex-Dice person there as well, maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's going to be amazing. Renee, our Essen correspondent, will be there. Charles and LFG and all the team. It's going to be an amazing event.
Can't wait.
Okay.
We will see you all next week with maybe even Leon. Bye.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.